This time, Heather's going to come and lead us in a missionary lesson. I'm going to excuse myself and go into the back of Lord's service in a little bit. So, Heather, thank you for coming and sharing with us tonight.
Actually, originally I wasn't going to be here, and when the pastor first asked me to speak, I said, "Oh no, I'm sorry, I can't because I'm going to be out of town." And then Lillian informed me that it was the Breezy Awards, and we'd better not be out of town. So, here I am. I was thinking, though, and it ties in so well with the lesson we're going to have tonight. You know, those of you who work in Caravan and work in VBS and work with our kids and teach Sunday school and whatever other jobs there are with our kids, drive van, my kids are reaching the age where they're starting to make their own choices. You know, they're 12 and 13 now, and as they're maturing and developing, they're starting to have a stronger opinion on things. And I was sharing this in Sunday school this morning. It's so neat to see my kids grow. And it's so neat to see my kids want to come to church. And, you know, there's been times when I say to them, "You know, I'm tired. What would you think if we just stayed home tonight?" And they say, "No! We have to go!" And so I thank God for my kids, and I thank God for this church and the influence that you have had over our children, because you are doing great things, whether you realize it or not. And we're going to talk more about that as the lesson goes on. But thank you from one mother to all of you. And I'm sure there's a lot of other moms and dads who would back that up. But thank you for what you're doing. Before I get too far into this, I have to remember to tell you, there are tomato plants, if there's some left. There are tomatoes out in the foyer. Andy grows these from, you know, seeds back starting in, I don't know, January or February, and he's got small trees and real nice tomato. They're the heirloom kind, so they actually have flavor as opposed to, you know, a lot of the ones you buy in the grocery store. I got some a couple weeks ago, and I'm almost ashamed to say it, but we threw some of them out because they were red. That's about all you can say. These are red and they taste good. So if you have a garden or you've got a pot or something and you want to try growing some tomatoes, these will be yummy. So help yourself to a tomato plant. We don't want to take them home. Next week we'll be bringing kittens. So, you know. Maybe not. But please help yourself to a tomato plant. Last time I spoke, we talked about the idea of the table of God. And we said how, we watched the video, we're going to watch it again in a couple minutes just to, as kind of a review. But we said how at the table, there are the guests. And the guests are the brokenhearted, the beaten down, the people of the world that are just hurting. And they come to God's table. And they find healing and they find forgiveness. And they find all the blessings that you can find at God's wonderful, magnificent table. And I'm sure there's been times in all of your lives when you have been the guest at the table, when you have been hurting and you have needed help, and you have found that help at God's table. And sometimes in our lives, we are the guests at the table. And also at the table is the one who serves and who cares for the guests. And sometimes in our lives, God asks us to be the servant and to take care of other people, to help to meet their needs, to be his hands and his feet. And sometimes that is our job. And sometimes we get to be the host at the table, and we get to be the ones who are inviting the people in and saying, "Come, enjoy the fellowship of the Lord." And we have that privilege of inviting the hurting and the needy to come to God's table and to have those needs met. And sometimes we can change those roles very, very quickly. You know, if today you're the guest, maybe tomorrow you might be the host. And we don't know how God will use us from moment to moment. And last time we looked at the story of the woman at the well and how Jesus approached her. And when he approached her, he first came as one of the guests. And he shared a need with her. I would like a drink of water. Would you give me a drink of water? He humbled himself. And he made himself needy, even though he wouldn't have to. He did that in order to reach out to her. And he made himself weak so that he could strengthen her. So he came, he started out as a guest, as someone with a need. And then he shared the good news of the living water. And he was able to serve her and show her how she could get this living water. And then after that, he became the host and invited her and the whole town to come to the table of the Lord. I'm hoping that this sounds a little bit familiar to you. but it's such a neat story, and I had never really looked at it that way. So we're going to kind of review, and like I said, there's a video. last time I spoke to it was the evening after Reverend Park had shared in the morning, and he was so incredible. But one of the things that really stuck with me when he spoke was he said, in order to understand someone, you need to stand under them. You need to humble yourself and make them more important than you are and not laud it over them that you have something that they don't. We need to stand under the people that we want to reach out to. And that really struck me. Service is about being humble and having a humble spirit. And again, we're going to talk a little bit more about that, but hopefully the video will kind of trigger your memory here a little bit, and you'll remember some of this. And then after the video, we're going to look at how the denomination is serving the world. We're going to look a little bit at what this church is doing, because you're doing an awful lot. And then maybe the most important thing is I want to challenge you individually to fulfill your calling. And I know a lot of you are, and that is just so encouraging and wonderful to see. But that's the plan. So we need a screen. He is good. Then we need a video.
I don't know that there is any space that Jesus used more than gatherings around the table to give people an imagination for how the kingdom of God would be. The tables themselves that Jesus came to were challenging for people. Jesus sat at the table with sinners and tax collectors, just as he did Pharisees and the righteous people of the day. One day in particular, Jesus sat at the table with a Pharisee, a well-respected member of society. This is what we would call the cool table. And before the meal begins, Jesus looks around and he can't help but notice people jockeying for the best seat. Then Jesus tells them the story about a great banquet put on by a man simply described as the master. And when the master's banquet is all ready, he sends out his servant to tell the invited guest that it's time to come to the table together. But unexplainably, they don't want to come. One by one, they make excuses and decline. And so the master sends his servant out to the lowly places, the dark and dingy corners of the town. And these people become the master's guests. See, put into the context of whom Jesus is speaking to, they would have known exactly who they were in the story. They, of course, were the original invited guests. So they would have been left to wonder, why would we decline that invitation? And this is the mystery that Jesus uses. He allows it to help them begin to wrestle with a very piercing reality. If they knew what it meant to come to the Lord's table, to truly drink from his cup, they might not be so eager to have the chair next to him. And furthermore, what we get from this story is a picture of who exactly has a place at the Lord's table. There's a place for the host who invites in the broken. There's a place for the servant who serves the broken. And there's a place for the broken who are his guests. That's it. I mean, this is not the cool table. Every place at this table involves deep and genuine humility. There is no place for self-seeking or pride, unless, of course, these empty attitudes lead to brokenness. And then a seat opens up. The story of the prodigal son is one that we all know and love because it speaks of God's love in such a comforting way. The son who is lost because of his own sin is not only embraced upon his return, but he's celebrated over. And just as that story could come to this perfect close, Jesus throws in this twist that really explains for us the challenge in coming to the table. See, there's this older son who, unlike his younger brother, had been good to his father and had never left him, and he stands at a distance from the party, fuming with anger. And the father comes to him and extends the invitation, saying, "My son, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours," and we are left to wonder what he will do. Because you see, coming to that table for him means hosting those he wouldn't have chosen to invite, It means serving those he's struggling to even accept as guests, most notably his younger brother. It means admitting that he is in need of the same grace and mercy that was just offered his wayward brother who was once lost but now is found. In short, it'll be difficult. Coming to that table will require some humble steps, but this is what it takes to participate in the mission of God. So if we can wrap our minds around that, then our question becomes, how do we live our lives at the Lord's table? How do we daily embody these roles, guest, servant, and host, in our relationships, in our communities, and in this world? One day, Jesus encounters this woman at a well. And there's two aspects of what we would call mission that are clear and distinguishable. Jesus is entering into a culture that is foreign, and he's dealing with a person who is badly in need of rescue. We know a little bit about the Samaritan woman simply from the time of day. No one would come to the well at noontime unless they wanted to be left alone or were shunned from society. In her case, it's probably both. She's a broken and enslaved soul, held captive by the consequence of her own sin and the judgments of others. Knowing this gives Jesus every right to come to her right away as a host and a teacher. But he doesn't do that. Instead, he encounters her in the posture of someone in need. The first thing he says to her is this, "Will you give me a drink?" So Jesus begins by being vulnerable, admitting that he is in need. And by so doing, not only does he take the seat of the broken, but he in turn offers her a chair at the table. This is something that maybe no one had done for her in years. His question and greeting her immediately gives her life eternal value. So our humble steps begin with vulnerability. Isn't it often the case on mission experiences that we end up receiving more than we could ever give? It's because our service to others reminds us just how in need we are. Jesus simply decides to begin there. Shaken by this, the woman at the well attempts to remind Jesus of the social norms that he's violating. But Jesus is unfettered, and he continues the process by now taking the role of a servant and offering her what he calls living water. So see, once we have presented our need, then we are truly prepared to serve. So our humble steps continue with service. Service that is seated in the fact that we too know what it is to be needy. So now that Jesus and the Samaritan woman have seen each other's need, and Jesus has occupied the role of both guest and servant, it's time for him to host and to teach. He explains to her how he knows exactly where she's coming from, but he does not leave her there. Instead, he invites her into some place altogether different. A place where her past brokenness is washed away. A place where she is needed. A place where gender and ethnicity, social status, economic status, and all these other things that we tend to value so much take a backseat to worshiping the Father in spirit and in truth. The woman says to Jesus, "I know that Messiah called Christ is coming, and when he comes, he will explain everything to us." And Jesus says, "I, the one speaking to you, I am he." And she goes out and invites others to come and receive what she has received. And round the table, we all go. The table, as challenging as it is for us, it's the most attractive place for our souls because it's a picture of heaven. This is a picture of how things were made to be. So you don't have to go out pleading for its relevance. This is where we all naturally want to be. And it's not because it's easy. It's not because it's comfortable. It's certainly not because it's safe. It's because it's good. It's because when we see this process in our own lives and the lives of others, honest vulnerability, humble service, open invitation, then we, like God in the very beginning, we recognize it as good. Your living mission is to take whatever humble steps you have to in order to truly come to the Lord's table. Your living mission is to pray for change. Your living mission is to partner with God in the restoration of this world. Your living mission is to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God.
Hopefully you remembered that, at least a little bit. So what is our denomination doing? Obviously, we have missionaries all over the world, and they could have selected any number of stories. There's probably thousands, if not millions, of stories that are out there. But we're just going to look at just a little, couple few snapshots of what the denomination is doing and just understand that it's a lot bigger. It's a lot bigger. We're going to start with a woman named Mary Spaulding. And she has her Ph.D. in biblical studies. She is an ordained deacon at the Church of Nazarene. She's a faculty member at the Nazarene Bible College and also Fuller Theological Seminary. And she also teaches around the world and gives of herself to travel to different countries and different places and give what God has blessed her with to the people there. Here's somebody who's could certainly sit back and say, see what I've done, see what I've accomplished. And she's willing to go out into the furthest reaches of the world to do God's will and to help people. In 2010, she took a trip to Liberia. Liberia had been decimated by civil war. Those of you who follow the news probably remember all of this. For years and years and years, this war had raged on. And because of this, not only did it destroy the country physically, but the people themselves had, you had a whole generation of people who had no education. Who not only had no education, but couldn't read, couldn't write, and didn't even know where to begin to bring this back about. The whole idea of what to teach and how to learn had been wiped out of their society and out of their culture. And you have these people that are completely illiterate and don't even know where to begin. And they don't even have the tools to begin. And so Mary comes into the Bible classes that they offer in Monrovia. There's a Nazarene Theological Institute there, and that's what she taught through. A lot of times these students would travel great, great distances. She offers, in this case, she offered a 5-day course, and these people would travel sometimes up to 4 days to attend this 5-day course. Just think about that, their dedication. They're walking in through the mud, through trails. Occasionally they might be able to hitch a ride with somebody and on something. However they could get there, they got there. They slept on the bare floor of the church at night. They got one meal a day when they attended classes. That was all there was. The church has a tin roof, and so when the rain poured down, you guys know rain on a tin roof, everybody sort of moved closer so that they could hear. They earnestly wanted to learn. They earnestly desired to hear what she had to say. Mary says that the needs are so great in Africa, but the blessings of servanthood far outweigh any difficulty that an educator might experience. And the educators experience a lot of difficulties. They're in dirt floor classrooms. There are no whiteboards. There are most certainly no computers. My kids at school have these smart boards, totally beyond my ability to even grasp. None of those. They don't even have pens, paper, pencils, anything, unless Mary brings it with her and distributes it to her students. They have nothing. They have no desks. They're writing on their laps. The challenges are great. Sometimes they weren't even in the building. They would set up underneath a tree, and as the day would move on, they did have plastic chairs. But as the day went on, they would move their chairs with the shade of the tree so that they could be in the comfort of the shade as the classes progressed. A lot of times the people are, obviously, they're very poor, they're very needy, and they can't just take off a semester to go learn. That would be asking far too much. They need to work and learn, and a lot of them are bivocational pastors, and so you can't ask them to just leave home and go somewhere for a long period of time. And so what the Church of the Nazarene does is they have short classes, 5 days, maybe 2 weeks, whatever, and they offer these quarterly. And then the students can come and then go back to their herds or their job or their farms or, whatever it is that they're doing to earn their living. They can return to that. and save up the money and get the time ready that they can go to the next class. And that's the way they do things. It's quite different. And like I said, most of the time these classrooms don't have electricity. They don't have any supplies. Sometimes they don't even have any public amenities. There's, you know, not a lot of comfort facilities at these as well. So it's a very, they're very dedicated. They really want to learn. They're coming because they have this passion to learn. Not because their parents are making them or because they think it might be fun or a cool thing to do. They have a passion and a desire to go and to do this and to come back to their people and to share what they've learned. And that's exciting. Mary says, she kind of gives a warning. She says, whatever your skills and training, and again, remember, this is somebody with a lot of skills and training. Whatever your skills and training, do not approach the developing world with an attitude of superiority, intellectual or otherwise. God opposes the proud, but shows favor to the humble. Haughty hearts can stay home. And she's quoting from James there, 4:6. So you can't go at this with this idea of I'm better than you. Do you remember in the beginning we said about understanding is to stand under? Haughty hearts can stay home. You're not going to be able to reach people with arrogance. Mary has served in Africa for 8 times in 11 different locations. She's done anything from a two-week term to a full semester. And she says anytime she goes to Africa, she has gained from the Africans far more than what she has given. And I think anybody who's been on a work and witness trip or who, you know, in anything, in any kind of service, would agree with that. So often you get so more out of it. God just blesses you far more than you feel that you've blessed the people that you're serving or the people that you're working with. God's kingdom is kind of always mixed up and backwards, and the first shall be last, and this is just one more example of that. You go to serve and to help, and somehow you walk away just feeling far more blessed than what you ever could have possibly given in return. There's a quote here. It says, we find our true freedom as human beings not in the cessation of war, not in our wasteland of materialism, not even under free governments run by weak and sinful politicians, but only as we serve Jesus Christ through his body here at home and around the world. Let us experience his liberation together. There is only one place where we can find true freedom, and that is in the body of Jesus Christ. Neat story. And one, like I said, that's being repeated over and over and over. So what does it look like to be a missional church? What if you're a mission-minded church, what does that look like? My first thought is look around because you're in one. but the lecture isn't about us. It's about other churches. So we're going to look at what a couple other churches are doing here. Man by the name of Roger Lutz. He's the executive director of the Flint East Side Mission in Michigan. It's been established about 18 years. And every day he sees opportunities to be a missional church. Their church has just opened its doors in amazing ways. And he sees firsthand the needs of the world and how God is meeting those needs. They started out by serving lunch. And then they expanded from lunch to distributing groceries. And then they opened a clothing house that people could come and receive clothing. Then they started distributing special baskets at Easter and Christmas and giving those to the needy people in the community. And then they sort of decided that maybe just feeding and clothing people wasn't enough, because if somebody is poor and they need food and clothes, there's a lot of other hurts and fears, emotional wounds, everything else, spiritual needs that's wrapped up with that. They just don't need only food and clothing. There's so much more. You get the whole package. And so they decided that they needed to open up even further and address all of these other needs as well. And so they started out by just seeking to reach people through prayer. How can we pray for you? Tell us your problems and we'll listen to you. Even if we don't have an answer, sometimes just listening. Let somebody unburden and listen to them can make a big difference. And so they have this whole ministry team, and they pray for a lot of different people, for a lot of different needs. And sometimes, not always, but sometimes, they get the joy of seeing the results from their prayers. One of these results is a man by the name of Tim. Tim was an alcoholic. He had been encouraged. He had been prodded. He had been nagged to give up his drinking. He would do better, and then he would slide back. And he would do better, and he would slide back. He had tried many, many times. And he came to the Flint East Side Mission. And he met Roger, who, as I said, is kind of the guy in charge of all of this. And when he had met Roger, a doctor had just told him that if he didn't make some changes in his lifestyle, he was not going to live very much longer. And that sort of gave him the encouragement, once again, to try to help himself. So instead of just helping himself, he came to the mission. The people at the mission prayed for him. They helped him. They encouraged him. They listened to him. And God is meeting those prayers. And now Tim is sober. He is doing well. And not only has he straightened up his life, but he's also trying to reach out to others with a drinking problem because he can understand where they're at. He can relate to them. Sympathy is great. Empathy is so much better. And Tim can empathize. He knows exactly what they're going through. And he knows the words to say so much better than somebody who's never been there could possibly do. His relationship with Christ is just blossoming, and he is growing as a Christian, and it's exciting, and he's moving forward, and it's working this time because Jesus Christ is in his life and making all the difference. Another man, his name is Landre, and he would go to the mission for lunch before school. And when I first read that, I thought, wait a minute, he's going for lunch before school. Is this a typo? You know, shouldn't have been breakfast? Yeah. No, he was going to lunch because he was going to an adult alternative school to complete his high school work. He wasn't a regular student. He was going back. He wanted to earn his high school diploma after, you know, the usual schedule of earning a high school diploma. So he was going to an adult alternative school. I'm glad you're all sitting down. When he first came and did lunch on his way to school, he was 17 years old, and he had a 5-year-old daughter. I'll let you do the math for a minute. He's 17. He has a 5-year-old daughter. Here's a young man who has made mistakes. You know, and I thought about this. He shows up at the Flint East Side Mission. He's given lunch. He's given a listening ear. He's given encouragement. He's given help. He is not given judgment. He is not given condemnation. And I thought, you know, how many churches, if somebody like Landre would walk into their doors at his age and with a child, what would they be looking at? And again, I honestly do believe our church is a bit of the exception. But how many churches would really condemn him for his mistakes? How many people that go under the name of Christian would do far more damage than good? And I thought it takes God's eyes and God's love and God's heart to motivate people, to embrace people that are so different than what we would consider normal or good. I think this story just testifies a lot to exactly how sincerely this mission is reaching out to the people around them. And it gives us kind of a goal. How sincerely and how much of Christ's love do we have in us? Could we reach out and embrace this young man the way they did if he was in our church? It would not be easy, perhaps, but, you know, could we do that? Would we do that? Would we be willing? So the people at Flint East Side Mission encouraged him. They helped him. As I said, they were fantastic. And he completed his studies. He got his diploma. And today, he is doing very, very well in college and earning a college degree and has a plan for his life. God is using him. The people at the mission still pray for him and that he will continue what that God will continue what has been started in his life. And it's exciting for them to see him grow and develop. And, you know, just as we look at our kids, you know, and think, well, I wonder what they'll be when they grow up. You know, the people at the mission are looking at him and saying, I wonder what plans God has. You know, now that he's graduated from high school and now he's in college, and what does God have in store for him? It's such an exciting time for them and for him in his life. Oftentimes when we think about being missional, we think about giving food. You know, we think of the food pantries and distributing the baskets at Christmas or so forth. but at Flinty's side, again, like I said, they look at people who are hungry and need to be clothed, and they know that there's an awful lot more. One of the areas that they realized was just medical care. A lot of times, people who are short on funds don't have the money for medical care either. And so they found an eye doctor who will volunteer 2 days a month, and he will give eye exams, and he distributes glasses either for free or for a very minimal cost, depending upon, you know, what he has there. And a lot of people have been fitted with glasses or have had the exams and have been helped in this very, very practical way. They also opened up a baby room, and there are 4 women who volunteer there, and any young woman who has a need can go, and they can get diapers, they can pick up formula, they can pick up baby clothes, whatever equipment, you know, whatever they need, they hopefully can find, or they can make an effort to get it for them at the mission. Kind of like it used to be the pregnancy care center, expectations, you know, that women can go and receive this help. And then, you know, when a church starts showing this enthusiasm and they get the ball rolling and things are moving, it just keeps going and that momentum picks up. And sometimes even the people in the community sort of get swept into it. And one time they were doing some cleanup work and some painting around the community, and there was a man in the neighborhood who walked past and saw this bustle activity, and he said, you know, what's going on? And they explained to him, well, you know, we got this work crew, we're going to be painting, we're cleaning up, we're doing all this stuff around here, this is what we have in mind. And he said, oh, okay. And he left. And a couple minutes later he came back and he's got a paintbrush in his hand, and he says, all right, if you're helping to clean up this neighborhood, I want to help. And completely unrelated to the mission, at least at that point. but there he was with his paintbrush, ready to help. And so it's contagious. If you can reach out into your community, sometimes you can just sweep them in right with the momentum of your enthusiasm and what you're doing. And that's always really neat to say. Roger said that when he came to Flintside originally, he looked around the community and he said he thought the community was doing pretty well. He looked around and, you know, it looked good. It looked fine. But then they started to pray and they started to really look around and they prayed that God would open their eyes and show them the community as it really was. And that's when they discovered how many of their neighbors needed help, how many of their neighbors were facing these difficult situations, and how many people around them seemed fine on the outside but were barely hanging on in the inside. And once they looked around their community with God's eyes, then they could say, okay, here's where we need to help. Here's what we need to do. And they got to work. And I thought about that. You know, so often we walk around and we say, everything looks good. You know, hey, we're in Mifflinburg. This is a nice middle class. There's nobody in Mifflinburg who has any needs, right? I mean, look around. Well-manicured lawns. You know, it's not a problem. But I think if we really prayed and we really looked, what problems would we find in Mifflinburg? What hurting people are right next door to us that need our help and need our care? We need to pray for God's vision, as they did at the mission. So that's just a little glimpse. And like I said, there's many, many more stories. Just a little glimpse of some of the things that's going on in the denomination. Want to look just real quick at our church. And, you know, basically this is just a couple minutes of bragging, because we're doing so much that's good. And I really just want to applaud what you're doing and encourage you. I think about the teens doing the 30-hour famine. to support the end of world hunger. We just have a team come back on a work and witness trip to Honduras. And it's not like that's a one of a kind deal. You know, we're constantly sending people around the world, helping and doing. We've got the next work and witness trip coming up to New Jersey, and I'm sure we'll have a nice team of people going there and helping out locally, and helping them with all the projects that they have. We've got Caravan. It's starting to wrap up here, but how many children have been influenced through what this church has done? How many of their parents have been influenced because of what this church has done through the Caravan program, through a Sunday school program? We've got VBS coming up. And we keep hearing over and over, you know, it takes an army. It does. all the people that volunteer through the VBS program. We have the Help Fund, where if somebody has a need, they can come and find some help for that. We have so many things. We've got Rachel Goss running around all over the place doing everything that she does. I don't think anybody even knows what all she's doing. And we have so many others that are just right there working and doing. And this church really can be commended because you are doing so much in so many different areas, meeting so many different needs. And it is great, and it is exciting, and it is encouraging. And I think that's why we have one of the reasons why we have such a healthy church and why God is blessing us, because we are blessing Him and just reaching out to the people around us. But we can't let that momentum slow down, and we can't ever give up a little bit and say, you know, we're doing good, we can step back. Uh-uh. There's no stopping. You got to keep right on going. And so we need to keep going with that. Last, I want to challenge you. And as I look around, there are so many of you who are doing so many things. And so in some ways, I kind of feel like, well, maybe I really don't need to say anything. But I do want to encourage you. And I know sometimes life gets busy and we get tired. I get tired. I can appreciate that. But we need to always be looking for new opportunities, new ways to serve, maybe new needs to be met, a new neighbor that moves in, a new coworker. I know some of you are really burdened for your coworkers, and that is just fantastic. And you pray for these people and you talk to these people. But constantly, constantly be watching for opportunities. Because if you don't watch for them, you're not going to see them. It's just the way it is. You can just go through life and say, well, God never, you know, He never opened any doors for me. Well, if you put on blinders and walk down the hallway, you're never going to see the doors. So just constantly be watching for those opportunities, praying for God's vision as you go through your life, wherever it takes you. One of the things that I've really come to appreciate is God has a purpose for every single one of us. And sometimes, you know, sometimes we think of the great Christians. You got Mother Teresa, you know, or Billy Graham or things like that. I say, well, I could never do that. That's not your purpose then. But God has a purpose, and it's no less important. God has people that He wants you to reach out to. When we went on the missions trip to Romania, I don't know what we did that was in God's plan for Romania. I mean, I can tell you what we did, but maybe there were so many other things that we did and the people we reached out to and things that happened that we don't even remember. They seem so trivial, but maybe it made a really big difference to that person's life. And one of those that I often think about is when we were flying there in the plane, I sat next to this man. And, we're stuck on a plane for all these hours, and so we talked. And I made some kind of a comment about me being a Jesus freak. And he said to me, you know, you're not like any Jesus freak I've ever met before. And that just kind of stuck with me. You know, what a comment, you know. You're not like any Jesus freak I've ever known. But, you know, sometimes I wonder if maybe my main purpose of going to Romania was nothing to do with Romania, but that guy sitting in the airplane next to me. I don't know. You know, maybe not either. Maybe I did more in Romania than I realized. I have no idea. But, you know, sometimes it's the stuff that we don't even think about. That we don't even realize, you know, it's the smile, it's the friendship, it's the whatever. And that is huge in God's eyes. And so each one of you has a purpose. And don't think, you know, well, I'm too old, or I don't look close enough to church, or I can't do this, or I can't do that. If you let yourself, God will use you in incredible ways. And maybe it's not the way we were expecting. Maybe it's not anything we had planned. I'm pretty well guarantee it's not what we had planned, because God never works with our plans. That's the other thing I've realized. It's not anything like we might have ever imagined. But He will use us. And we can't think that any job is too little or too insignificant, because if that's what God wants us to do, it's huge. If we are walking in the path that He has laid out, if we're walking through the doors that He is opening, if we are speaking to the people that He is having us encounter, then no matter how insignificant it might look to the rest of the world, it is a really big deal to God. And you don't know the influence you might have in somebody else's life. So like the video said, you know, walk humbly. Look at the people around you and see the needs that are there, because there are so many. And as you can, and as God gives you the opportunity, take advantage of that. We can't meet every need all the time, but take advantage of it when God opens those doors for you. And just be constantly watching for how you can be used by God. So thank you so much for being here. And I just really encourage you, as the week goes on and we go into next week and into the summer, ask God how He can use you, and then be used and be blessed, because it's a great place to be. So thank you.